Hey, podcast listeners, I do not say this lightly. This may be one of the very best shows I've ever done. It's a conversation with John over in the UK. He's with Living Waters, so Ray Comfort's ministry over in the UK. He heads that up. And I'm telling you, this is a Grand Slam home run. I cannot help but say, after you're done hearing this conversation, I wish you would come over to creationtoday.org, partner with us, and hear the rest of the conversation. We ended up going for another 2 hours talking about this concept, the arguments against it. It's known as Haldane's Dilemma. You're going to love it. Enjoy today's show.
Haldane did some simple calculations and found that humans couldn't have possibly evolved from ape-like creatures. There just wasn't enough time. His calculations directly conflicted with the theory of evolution. This became known as Haldane's Dilemma, and this dilemma was never resolved, and it's been going on since 1957. So you'd think we'll know about this by now.
Welcome to the Creation Today Show, where we bring together interviews with experts and solid Bible teaching. Your host, Eric Hovind, affirms the ultimate authority of God's Word, the truth of creation, and why it matters to you.
So how do you destroy evolution in 5 minutes or less? Guys, you are in for a great conversation today on the Creation Today Show. I'm your host, Eric Hovind, and joining me is the director of Living Waters Europe. Ladies and gentlemen, help me welcome Mr. John Harris. John, how you doing, buddy?
Hey, man, it's fantastic to be here, Eric. I'm doing very well. It's great to see you.
I am so thankful to finally be having a great conversation with you like this one. I first heard about this argument that you're going to present that is, I mean, that explosion, Kent, maybe you should have done an atomic bomb more than just a little bit. This argument that you're going to present is absolutely destructive. It's a nuclear bomb to the evolutionary idea, isn't it?
That's absolutely true, Eric. There's absolutely no recovering from this. If you take this to someone who tells you evolution is a fact, they're going to be shocked because there is nothing they can do. Most of the time when I've spoken to people about this, they go completely silent for a long time because they realize they have no argument against it. So it's going to be fantastic. I really can't wait.
Well, the Bible tells us to cast down arguments that exalt themselves against the knowledge of God. And guys, that's exactly what John is going to do today. He's presenting an argument. And if I understand this correctly, do you kind of want to set up the argument for people before you give them the little 5-minute version, right?
That's right. If I just prepare it a little bit so that people understand where the argument is coming from, the whole thing would make much more sense. And you'd be more confident in sharing the actual the truth with people.
And really, that's the point. We don't want you guys to just simply hear the argument. We want you to know the science behind it and the argument so that you can present this. So to my skeptic friends that are watching, I am, first of all, thank you. I'm so glad you're actually checking out the other side and finding out exactly what we're saying or what some of the arguments are. There's a lot of people that close their eyes to these arguments or they dismiss them. I just want you to know we're going to do the best we can to cover as much as we can. And then in the second half of this show with our partners, John, you're going to go through every single thing you've ever heard as an objection to this argument, and you go through all of the so-called objections and show how they don't work. Is that correct?
I'm going to go through everything plus more, and if there are some questions coming up, I'm happy to answer those too. But I don't think you'll find that I've missed anything. You'll find that all the questions have been answered and dealt with.
You're the director of Living Waters Europe, which means like Ray Comfort here in America, you're over there in Europe doing lots and lots of evangelism, and you've used this argument before. How has it worked?
Oh, every single time it's been deadly. In fact, I'm going to show you a video at the end, which unfortunately won't make it in the first half. It'll happen afterwards, where I've actually done it and I've left people speechless. I've had people who said things like, you know what, this is so incredible. I'm going to go to church because of this.
Beautiful. Okay. Yeah. Introduce this subject. I don't want to waste time. I want to get right into this. Introduce this subject. What do we need to know before we hear the argument? And then let's hear that argument.
All right. No problem. Can I share my screen?
Please do. Actually, yeah, the slides are really going to help on this because of the way the argument goes and the science behind it is just fascinating. So, and by the way, as you guys listen to this and my partners out here, thank you guys for joining me. I love having you guys on here, Thomas and Rachel and everybody on here. Thank you guys. And Amanda. I love science. And the more science I study, the more it shows me the mind of God and how genius it is. So as we watch the lead up to the argument, First of all, take notes. Be ready to take notes. I'm ready to take notes, okay? And then let your mind just be in awe of who God is as we learn. John, take it away, man.
Absolutely. This is fantastic. I'm so excited to be introducing this. This is about time we as Christians actually know this thing so that we can use it everywhere we go. So today's topic is about Haldane's dilemma. So what is Haldane's dilemma? Well, Haldane's dilemma literally destroys evolution in 5 minutes. I'm not exaggerating, and it is irrefutable. Now, this dilemma is really easy to present to people. You can just explain it verbally, or you can write it down on a piece of paper, show it to them. I now put it on a PowerPoint slide, which I can show you later, and it's super easy to use. You don't have to remember anything at all, and I'm happy to share it with you. So if Eric, you want me to pass it on for you to share it with other people, you can put it on a tablet.
I want the PowerPoint.
Done.
Yes.
And you can share it with people, and you can also use it yourself on a tablet, on a PC, on iPad, whatever you've got PowerPoint with. It'll be fantastic. This argument, this dilemma is so effective. I've used this during open air. You're going to see that later on when I show you a demonstration of it. I've used it in universities. I've used it when talking to a hardened evolutionist. I've used it everywhere, especially with Christians who believe that God somehow used evolution to bring about life. So Haldane's dilemma is very effective, and it's very easy, and it's very quick to go through. So what is it? How does it work, and how can we use it? I'm going to go fairly fast with this because I'm condensing a one-hour topic into 30 minutes, actually 20 minutes, 22, 23 minutes. So here it comes. So here's a quick introduction. This dilemma was brought up by a very famous British scientist. His name was John Burdon Sanderson Haldane, but they nicknamed him Jack. I have no idea why, or JBS. He was an evolutionist himself. This is what happened after they discovered that the DNA molecule exists in the form of a three-dimensional double helix in 1953. Haldane did some simple calculations a few years later and found that humans couldn't have possibly evolved from ape-like creatures. There just wasn't enough time. So how did he do it? Well, he took everything into account. I don't have time to go through this, but if you want me to later, I can. And he found out in his calculations that his calculations directly conflicted with the theory of evolution. This became known as Haldane's dilemma, and this dilemma was never resolved, and it's been going on since 1957. So you'd think we'll know about this by now. But of course, some evolutionists go around saying that this dilemma was resolved, even though it wasn't. But those who say it don't really understand the dilemma, nor do they understand the solution. This is what they do. The moment you talk to somebody, they go where? They go on Wikipedia. And they just repeat what it says. And it turns out the solution they say they have, which is on their Wikipedia, is worse than the dilemma itself.
I love it.
I mean, it's unbelievable. If what they're telling me is true and they take it at face value, then they destroyed evolution again. So it just backfires on them all the way. We're going to talk about this later on as I take you through the refutation. But first, to appreciate the seriousness of this dilemma, we'll have to go all the way back to the time of Darwin. In Darwin's days, when he wrote about the origin of species, he didn't know the complexity of a cell. I don't need to tell you that, Eric. He thought a cell is made of a microscopic lump of jelly-like substance, entirely destitute of texture, destitute of organs, formless, lump of albuminous matter, and with no trace of organization. Basically, he thought the cell is textureless, organless, formless, jelly-like material that has no organization. Here we are, fast forwarding 150 years later, and this is what we discover. Here is a simple diagram of a cell. And it turns out this is what this formless, textureless lump of jelly-like substance really looks like. I've got this big printout that I take with me when I'm doing this in person to show people, and it baffles them. It's mind-blowing. This is more complicated than a television circuit diagram, if you've ever seen one. We don't even know everything about the cell yet. So much for Darwin's jelly-like substance with no trace of organization. I think it's clear we should not be getting science lessons from Charles Darwin. It turns interrupt me anytime you want, Eric.
This is good.
So it turns out in the nucleus of every cell, there is this most fascinating, sophisticated database system that we have ever seen anywhere. We call it DNA. DNA is organized in long structures like chromosomes. Humans have 46 of them. That's 23 pairs from each parent in each cell. Here you see it under a light microscope. This is under an electron microscope. Here is one zoomed in. I mean, this is impressive, but we haven't even touched the surface. So I'm going to do this really quick because normally I take a little bit more time explaining this, but let me show you how DNA works. This is what a double standard DNA looks like. It has two sides and it's twisted. That's why we call it double helix. If you untwist it, it looks like a ladder. The rungs of this ladder are called base pairs. We call it base pairs because there are two of them, one on each side of the strand. These base pairs, one on each side, are holding the sides of the ladder. And these base pairs are the bits that hold information about everything. It's actually the database in the DNA. So that's why we have things like 10 fingers or 8 fingers and 2 thumbs, because the DNA says so. So we have 2 arms and 2 legs because the DNA says so. We have eyes, ears, nose, tongue, liver, kidneys, a digestive system, skeletal system, circulatory system. All of those things is because of what's programmed in the DNA system. This is one giant database full of information. The entire physical body is built the way it is because of the DNA database. It's like an instruction manual that tells you how to build you. Now, there are a lot of similarities between a computer architecture and DNA. And I'm not sure if anyone have done this comparison before, but as a computer systems analyst and a software designer and developer by profession, I can tell you that the similarities are uncanny. I'm going to take you through this very quickly just to blow your mind. For example, a computer has bits and bytes. I'm sure we've all heard of these terminologies before. A byte is 8 bits. Well, in the DNA, instead of bits, you have base pairs. And instead of bytes, you have something called codons. And a codon is made of 3 base pairs. Look, if you can't follow this, don't worry. I'm just doing this to show you how fascinating this is. And also, it's going to help you later on when we talk about mutations. In computers, several bytes make up a word depending on the computer architecture. In the DNA, several codons make a gene and several genes make a genome. In computers, all the bits and bytes together makes up the total RAM. And in the DNA, all the base pairs make up the DNA. In computers, the instructions are combined within bytes, while in DNA, the instructions are contained within the codons, which are used to make proteins. They are just identical, except the DNA and cell are infinitely more sophisticated than a computer system. If I were to explain how the DNA makes copies of itself and creates protein, which we don't have time to do, and usually I include that, you would have no doubt that an almighty intelligent designer has put this all together. I'm sure, Eric, you have explained this many times in the past, and you have probably a lot of material you can show people, but this is just mind-blowing.
This isn't even the argument that you're going to cover. This is something else that's mind-blowing, and it's not even this other mind-blowing argument.
And 100%. Now, Bill Gates said in his book, DNA is like a computer, but far, far more advanced than any software ever created. Now, no one would believe that a computer is made by accident, right? But we go around telling our students what? That DNA came about by random chance processes. It's just embarrassing. It really is. If each one of these DNA strands inside each one of these cells of our cells were to be unwound and they would be literally 5 or 6 feet long each. We have about 50 to 75 trillion of these cells in our bodies. Sadly, some of us have more of those cells than others. I'm sure of mine. If the DNA from each cell were placed end to end, the chain would be from 90 to 135 trillion meters long. I don't know if you have any idea how long that is, but I'm going to give you an idea. If all the DNA in one person's body were placed end to end, it would extend to the moon, not just halfway there, but all the way there, but not just once, but 552,000 times. How much information is that? I'm going to paraphrase that to, it's a lot of information. Now, if you didn't think that's impressive, check this one. If one set of DNA, that's one cell's worth from every person who ever lived, estimated to be almost 50 billion, whoever worked that one out, were placed in a pile, it would weigh less than one aspirin. Remember, DNA is basically the instruction to create a complete human being in microscopic detail. So if I were to store away the entire database of every human being ever lived, it would fit in a container that weighs about 320 milligrams. Now, I mean, this is just, can you imagine, right? Remember, that's not just one human being. That's every human being who ever lived. You could just rebuild all of mankind from scratch. All right.
And this isn't even the argument. Oh, my goodness. Wow. Okay, this is good.
Unbelievable. So this is where Haldane's dilemma comes in. So let's start. Who was Haldane and what did he say? Well, Haldane was a famous scientist. He was a British-born Indian scientist known for his work in the study of physiology, genetics, evolutionary biology, and in mathematics, where he made innovation contributions to the field of statistics and biostatistics. Let me summarize this for you in case you didn't get it. Haldane was a clever guy. I think that's he's certainly cleverer than me, all right? And I'm happy to admit that, okay? So, and even though he was the one who discovered this dilemma, which completely destroys evolution, as far as I know, he still died as an evolutionist. Unbelievable. In fact, he was a socialist, Marxist, atheist, and humanist. So I can honestly tell you he wasn't a Christian.
Yeah, no kidding. And that's probably why he held on to evolution. If you want, and that's what happens all the time, we've discovered this, if you want to believe a particular worldview, you will find a reason to believe that. So you will hold on to evolution in order to be this person instead of searching for the truth. But that's a whole other subject. By the way, I think if you grow a mustache, I'm looking side by side. I think we might have a match here, buddy.
I think I could look like him.
I think you possibly could, man. I think you could make that happen.
I'm not sure I'm that handsome, I'll be honest with you. I'm not going to be able to pull it off. But thank you for the compliment. I'll take it. But this guy goes as far as possible, you can imagine, from Christianity. He's literally the opposite of everything a Christian stands for, right?
Yeah.
But John Haldane was so clever, other evolutionists said that he was perhaps the most brilliant science popularizer of his generation. Some even said he's the cleverest man I ever knew. So there you have it. If nothing else, this guy was smart. They're all happy to declare this, right? So evolutionists can't say this guy wasn't clever enough. Now, according to Theodosius, there you go, I could do this, Dobzhansky, who is very well known himself as a Ukrainian-American geneticist and evolutionary biologist, he said Haldane was always recognized as a singular case. Now, singular means he was exceptionally good. He was just great. And Michael J.D. White, who was a zoologist and cytologist, by the way, cytologist is not Scientologist. Cytology is the branch of biology. He said that Haldane was the most erudite biologist. Now, erudite means that he was like great, with great knowledge. He was the most erudite biologist of his generation and perhaps of this century. I think we're making the point here. It's very clear. Haldane was clever. He was smart. He was intelligent. And it makes sense for evolutionists to really pay attention to what this guy is saying. Agreed? I think so. So what was this dilemma that he was talking about? Well, to make this easy for me and for you, I'm going to read some bits from this book called The Biotic Message, which explains it all. If you want to know more information, you can get this book and read it for yourself, but it's a bit technical, but I don't want you to worry. I'm going to explain everything along the way. Afterwards, I'm going to graphically show you how it fits all together. So in the 1950s, the evolutionary geneticist J.B.S. Haldane calculated the maximum rate of genetic change due to differential survival. He reluctantly, by the way, concluded there is a serious problem here, now known as Haldane's dilemma. His calculations show that many species of higher vertebrate could not plausibly evolve in the available time. Evolution requires the substitution of old prevalent traits with new rare traits. There are limits to the rate these substitutions can occur, limits that depend primarily on the reproduction capacity of the species. Haldane's dilemma examines these limits. So what is he saying? He's saying that Haldane understood how mutations work in the DNA. A substitution is a type of mutation that's relatively common. This happens when one of these base pairs we just talked about breaks off or becomes corrupt, changes. It can go corrupt because when it makes a copy of itself, when a cell makes a copy of itself, or when it's making a copy for translation, or when it's exposed to external ray like X-ray. So Haldane, who was a population geneticist, wanted to work out the limits to this mutation and see how many generations it would take for a human being to evolve. So how does it all work? Here's an example from this book, same book. Imagine a breeding population of 100,000 individuals. Imagine 99,998 have the old trait O, and two, a male and a female, have the new trait N. So old trait O, new trait N. Imagine trait N has just arisen from O by beneficial mutation. The evolutionary goal is to substitute trait N for trait O in the population. To accomplish this goal, differential survival must eliminate the 99,998 type O individuals and all their heirs. So what is it saying? It's saying that if you have a mutation in a population and it just happens to be a good one, just by coincidence, then the couple who had the good mutation must outlive all the other people in that population. No big deal. It makes sense if you want to keep the good mutations in the population. So how is it going to do that? Well, this can be accomplished in a single generation if there is perfect selection. That is, if the survival values of O and N, that's the old and the new trait, are 0 and 1. 0 means it's not going to continue, and 1 means it's perfect selection. It's going to keep going and be part of the population. Yet, there is an enormous cost involved. For every surviving type N, that's the new trait, individual, there are 49,999 individuals type O that must perish without heirs. The population size must be regenerated from the two survivors. It makes sense. Basically, when there is a new beneficial trait, the individual or the couple with this new beneficial trait must survive over all the others who don't have the beneficial mutation, clearly. Now, everything should hopefully be clear so far. But if not, don't worry. I'm going to explain all this in a simpler way in just a minute. This is where it gets interesting. So make sure you're paying attention to this bit because it's where it's all happening. It goes on to say, let us assume evolution can happen like this continuously, generation after generation, for millions of years. Wow, that's a big assumption anyway. But let's take it. Take a species like man with a nominal 20 years generation time. Extrapolate backward from this known species to a time 10 million years ago. This is three times earlier than the said occurrence of the 4-foot-high Australopithecine Lucy. So he's saying, let's pretend the human generation is 20 years and an evolution happened over 10 million years ago, which, by the way, is three times older than Lucy, who is supposedly one of our early human ancestors. Now, by the way, the author of this book, you'll be pleased to know, is Walter Remine, and he's a young Earth creationist. And he's being extra generous here because he's giving the evolutionists plenty more time than they have. That's how confident this is that he is about this dilemma. He's so confident that he's happy to give them three times more years than they have because he knows it's not going to help them. And that's what I do everywhere I go when I'm presenting this to the evolutionists. I literally change all the figures in their favor because I know there's going to be no hope. So Walter Remine goes on to say, this is twice as old as the alleged split between gorilla, chimpanzee, and man. So he's saying not only is the 10 million years is three times older than Lucy, but it also happens to be twice as old as the supposed split between humans and gorillas and chimpanzees. Now, I don't know about you, but this is pretty generous. And I think you can't get fairer than that.
He's actually setting them up to say, hey, even if I give you extra time, he's kind of setting them up to say, even with extra time, he's going to show the dilemma here.
Absolutely. He's basically going to. He's going to be so generous, ridiculously, all the way through to point out that, look, I'm going to give you all the benefit of doubt. And despite that, it's just not going to work out. I'm going to show you how it's not going to work out. And I do this when I'm doing this in person. I say, hey, whatever you give me, I'm just going to double it or something like that, right? So he goes on to say, right, in that much time, how many traits could be substituted at this crashing pace? So he's giving him a crashing pace. This is beyond what they say it is, right? One per generation, maximum approximately 500,000. So he's saying, look, if we're kind enough to give you, the evolutionist, more time than you ask for, in fact, two or three times more, and pretend we get one beneficial mutation for every single human generation, which we don't get, we will even ignore the problem we call fitness cost. Now, when I'm doing this talk in a more broader way, I explain fitness cost and how there is no such thing as a beneficial mutation without fitness cost. You pay for it. You never improve. You improve one place, there is a detriment somewhere else. So there's no such thing as a free lunch. If that's the case, then we end up with just 500,000 beneficial DNA base pairs. Now, is that a problem? Well, yes, it's a big problem. Why? Because that's 0.01% of the nucleotide sites in each human. Nucleotide is another word for base pair. Well, what does that mean? Well, it means it's a disaster. But why is it a disaster? Because that's about 0.0001 of the entire DNA, when the actual number we need is more than 30 million beneficial mutations, not even 500,000. You'll see in a minute what I mean and why I'm saying 30 million. I'm coming to that in a minute. We just don't get enough mutations. So the figures are not working out, even after being generous. Yes, go for it.
So in 10 million years, at 20 years per generation, and one beneficial mutation per generation, you would accomplish 500,000 beneficial mutations. And that's nothing compared to what we actually need. You need 30 million of them.
Yeah, and we're being extra generous here. So we're giving them plenty more mutations than they are expecting, because Haldane's dilemma, you'll see in a minute, is far more explosive than this. You will see actually how many mutations they think they're going to get. And then I want to see their faces. What happens is you show them what's impossible and you make it 10,000 times worse. And then, then you see the results, right?
Okay.
So after being extremely generous with the mutation rates, and even after giving the evolutionists two or three times more time, even after ignoring the fitness cost, even after giving them a generous 20 years per generation so that they have more offsprings, mathematically, evolution just goes bankrupt. There is no way to fix this. In fact, later, when they try to fix it, they only manage to fix it by, guess what? Abandoning natural selection. And this is the bit that makes me so happy, right? They abandon natural selection. What have they told you? It's mutation through natural selection. Well, they abandon it and they don't tell you, which ends up confirming what Haldane said all along. They invent a new evolution theory that I'm going to introduce to you in the second half, right? Well, you're not going to believe what I'm going to tell you, that we all overlooked, which makes everything much worse, right? So basically, they told us evolution has changed and no Christian picked up on it. And we're going to check it out later. But it gets worse, my dear friend, Eric. If we actually worked out or worked with the real numbers Haldane gave us, then it falls apart even more, because Haldane said we only get one beneficial mutation, not every generation, but every 300 generations. So what happens if we use the mutations or the mutation rate that Haldane came up with? Well, my good friend Eric, we only end up with 1,667 base pairs. I'm speechless.
So instead of 500,000 beneficial mutations at one per generation, you actually only have 1,667, and you need to get 30 million, and that was giving you 10 million years to do this.
Thank you, Eric, for noticing, because I wanted to point that out. Okay?
Wow.
So what, I mean, how are we not using this? I mean, this is what we call a catastrophe for evolutionists. That's why this became known as Haldane's dilemma. And by the way, an evolutionist came up with that. Again, I'm going to be explaining that in the second half when we get there. There is no recovery, Eric. There is no way out. This is dead end for them, right? So this whole idea of evolution that teaches from goo to you by way of the zoo became scientifically and mathematically corrupt, bankrupt overnight. Last time I checked, mathematics is a valid form of science, right? And if mathematics goes against evolution, then evolution is not scientific. I think we can all agree with that.
Yes.
Okay. So there is no kind way of saying this to the evolutionists, but it's game over. It's farewell. It's adios, ciao, tschüss, whatever language you want to say this in, it's gone. Evolutionists have been keeping this very quiet. Why do you think they've been keeping it very quiet for decades? It's for a good reason. But it's time it came out, and it's time it's exposed, and it's time it's been used. We Christians, we are allowing too much. Okay, now, there were four things I want you to remember before I show you how to present this. Now, because I don't have much time, and I'm going to save some time, and I never keep an eye on time, so Eric, you might have to sort me out with this, but I'm already predicting the future. We don't have time to go through all the four, so I'm going to give you a summary. So this is what you're missing. I can't believe you're missing all of this. All right. So here are all the facts again, known as the summary of summaries. Fact number one, the human DNA is larger than 4.5 billion base pairs. You probably didn't realize this because most people tell you it's 3.2, but it got changed. They updated those databases. It's now 4.5 billion base pairs. But we'll assume it's only 3 billion base pairs because we're kind and we love the evolutionists and we want to make it easy for them. Fact number two, according to evolutionists, human ancestors lived about 6 million years ago. Some say 5, some say 6, some say less. Well, we're going to be extra generous here and give them 10, as we said we would do. And fact number three, according to evolutionists, humans and ape-like creatures differ by 15%. You probably heard people talk about 3 and 4%. Well, guess what? The latest figures, as far as 2021 is concerned, it's gone up to by 15%. You know why? Because they've got the latest genome being mapped. So now we've got the figures. But guess what we're going to do? We're going to go all out and say 1%. I mean, how many times worse would it be if we use those figures, right? And fact number four, even though the average human generation is 25 years, we'll assume that it's 20 to help them out. Again, we're being kind Christians, and we must always make sure we come across very gracious. And finally, going all the way back to where we started, despite overwhelming evidence that we don't get any beneficial mutations without fitness cost, this is important, maybe we need to talk about this later on, and despite Haldane calculating that you get only one beneficial mutation every 300 generations, guess what we're going to do? We're going to go all out on this one. We're going to give these evolutionists one fully bona fide beneficial mutation, which is going to be...
You are too kind, John.
You know what? If I wasn't so humble, you know, I would receive that.
I can feel the love, buddy. I can feel the love for the evolutionist coming right here.
Look, am I coming across excited? Because I am.
Yes. Yes.
We have good reasons, right? Because we've been told all along a lie, and now we've found out. It's almost like that lie has been exposed and everybody's going to find out. And they've been hiding it under the carpet for so long.
Wow.
Now, seriously, we can't get fairer than that. This is giving the evolutionists the maximum benefit. We're going way beyond the call of duty here. There's no reason to get a single complaint about our calculations, Eric. So hopefully you won't get any emails complaining, saying you've not been fair. So theoretically, evolutionists should be happy with us. You know, they shouldn't be angry or unhappy. All right. Now comes the bit that I'm going to tell you how you use this in real life. I don't even know if I'm doing well for time, but I'll do this quick. Now, this is the slide that I was telling you about, and it's already built in to do all the tricks for you. You don't have to remember numbers. You don't have to remember anything. As you can see, it says number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Take it in that order. If you're on a PowerPoint, you just say next, 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 or you just touch the box on that numeric order. So literally, number one pops up like that, and you tell the guy, look, how many human base pairs do we have in DNA? And they would say, well, you know, 4, 5, whatever they come up with, doesn't matter. Say, look, I'm going to give you all 3 billion base pairs. This works in your favor, trust me. And then I'd say, hey, tell me, what's the percentage difference between an ape-like creature and a human? And they would say, oh, we think this is 3 or 4%. Actually, if they're educated, they know it's 15 now. But we're going to go all out and shock them with 1%. We're going to assume that it's a 1% difference. We'll say, look, number three, how many changes do we need? If it's just 1% difference of 3 billion, well, what's 1% of 3 billion? Well, they should be able to work this out generally quickly. It's 30 million. That's it. They say, okay, good. Let's go to number four. Number four, total years from an ape-like creature to humans. How many years ago did this happen? And they would say, well, this happened 4, 5, 6 million years ago. I say, look, I tell you what, don't worry about it. I'm going to give you all of 10 years because I'm loving and I'm kind and I want you to win. That's what I want you to do. And then I'll say, look, how many years per generation does a human being have? And they're going to say, well, I don't know, maybe 25 years or 30 years. I say, look, don't worry. We're going to give you all of 20 years. Is that fair? Yes, that's fair. How about this last one? Total generations per beneficial mutation. How many generations do you need before you have one beneficial mutation fixed in the population? And he's going to say, well, I don't know, maybe several generations. You say, well, I tell you what. I'm going to give you one whole beneficial mutation every generation. This cannot be unfair, right? This is a totally fair mathematical equation. And then you say, look, let's work it out. how many beneficial mutations we'll have if all these things are true, and you just divide them by each other, and you end up with 500,000. And I say, does that make sense to you? He would say yes. I say, well, just look at the number. I need 30 million. You've got 500,000. How are you going to fix it, sir? I gave you all the benefit of doubt. How are you going to fix it? And then when I see him sweat and he doesn't know what to say because he's just been caught, you say, look, do you really want to see the real figures? The real figures is that you get one beneficial mutation every 300 generations. And if you were to divide those numbers, you get 1,667. Now tell me, what do you think? And at this point, they would explode because this is a religion, right? Yes. Suddenly, you just told their religion that it's nonsense. And they have no idea what to do with it. These are facts. There is nothing you can do to walk away from it. Now, I'm going to just tell you one more thing, and then we can close, and then you can do what you like. If you really want to know how many years it really takes for us to have, if we have one beneficial mutation every 300 generation, well, you don't need 10 to get 30 million mutations. How many years would it take to do this? Well, it's 180 billion years. That's more than 10 times the age of the entire universe based on the evolutionary timescale.
Whoa! So you need 180 billion years to go from an ape to a human. And that's still just with that 1% different, and we're 15% different. And all you're doing is holding up a mirror saying, this is what you believe. This is what you claim. Just so you know, this is what you're trying to present as a scientific fact. And simple mathematics destroy the entire... That is how to destroy evolution in 5 minutes. Actually, I think you probably did that very part in less than 5 minutes.
I did it in 4 minutes. Practicing it. I did it in 4 minutes.
Oh, that's fantastic. Now, I know you kind of worked your way up to presenting what it was so that we could have the science behind all these different numbers, but just presenting it is actually pretty simple. It doesn't make sense. But you say the atheists and the evolutionists, the skeptics, they're still not buying it, even after seeing the mathematics. Sometimes they come up with things to try to rescue this their evolutionary religion.
Well, the professional priests, evolutionists, have say a lot, which I'm gonna deal with later on. But the average guy literally had nothing to say. They just look at you blank and they say, I don't know how that just happened. I don't know what to do with it. And by the way, if you want to stick to the 10 million years, and it still mutate in such a way that you have an ape-like creature happening, coming to a human being, you need 60 beneficial mutations per generation. It's basically a miracle. You will need a miracle. If you see one of those happening where you get 60 mutations per generation, basically you've just seen a divine intervention, because that we don't even get one, but you'd need 60. That's 60 times more than what the level of generosity we've been so far. It's over, Eric. It really is.
It really is impossible. Okay, I want to get into what people say are objections to this, because it really is plain, simple mathematics, which is what makes this such a powerful dilemma. But there are objections. I want to get into that in the second half with my Creation Today partners. For those of you joining me on all the different social media platforms, thank you very much for hanging out with us. I would love for you to get in touch with John and get more of what Living Waters Europe is doing. You can subscribe to him on whatever social media platform you use, whether it's you guys are on Twitter, and TikTok and Instagram and Facebook and YouTube. Just type Living Waters Europe, Living Waters Europe, and you'll come to their information or come to their page. If you want to go to the website, it's Living Waters EU for Europe, livingwatersEU.com. And would you guys please pray for John and the team over there? God is using them to reach people, to train people. And let me just tell you something. Satan does not like his religion that he's done such a good job educating the world with being destroyed. And this is an absolute bomb to the evolution worldview. So pray for him and pray for his team as they're over there ministering in Europe and around the world. This really is powerful. John, is there anything else they need to know to get in touch with you? Or if they want to get in touch with you?
If they want to get in touch with me, my email address, especially because I do an apologetic session every single month, if they want to be included in that. So they can just email me at John Harris. They can go John Harris, J-O-H-N-H-A-R-R-I-S, which is my full name, at livingwaters.eu.com, which is what you mentioned a second ago, and just say, I've heard you with Eric Hovind, and I would like to be included in the monthly apologetics. They don't have to join, but we will send them an email to say, if you want to, these are the details you can have. And we talk about different topics every single month.
Love it. Fantastic. Guys, make sure you're getting in touch with John and what he does. I'm very excited, especially this one, but he does this on so many different subjects. It really is powerful. So, John, we're going to have you back on to talk about more of the things that you've dove deep into so that you can present like this. Oh, I know I'm over time. Thank you guys for hanging on social media and on our podcast. We sure do love and appreciate you tuning in to be discipled. And thank you. Special shout out to Jack Hibbs and Real Life Network for you guys taking on this program and being willing to present this truth to other people as well. We sure do appreciate it. We'll see you next week. Next week, by the way, we've got a great show for you. What did the church fathers really think about Genesis? There's new arguments coming out today that say, oh, the church fathers right after Jesus and his disciples, the people that the disciples discipled, oh, they really believed in old age. They didn't believe in a young earth creation like the Bible teaches. They believe that is going to be totally debunked next week when we talk about what did the church fathers really think about Genesis. I think you're going to love that conversation. Look forward to seeing you next week. If you want the rest of this conversation, by the way, it's real simple. Come over to creationtoday.org, partner with us for any amount to help us reach the world with the truth, and you get access to everything we do, past, present, and future. So we'd love to have you at creationtoday.org. If you want a shortcut, creationtoday.org/partner, creationtoday.org/partner. God bless you guys. Look forward to seeing you next week. I told you it was good. Did I not say that this is an awesome conversation, guys? It only gets better from there as we go through the arguments that try to oppose Haldane's dilemma, and you find out they make things way worse. Evolution is dead. It is gone. It is done. You and I need to be proclaiming the truth. So let me challenge you, share the gospel with somebody this week. Again, if you want to hear the rest of this conversation, come on over to creationtoday.org and partner with us. Thank you guys for listening. We love you. God bless. Genetics don't lie, let me break it down for you. Haldane's dilemma, evolution is through. Mathematical impossibilities, crystal clear. Darwin's theory, it's time to make it disappear. Genetic variation, it's just not enough to create the complexity we see. It's tough, random mutations and natural selection. Nah, it's just a flawed conjecture, no correction. Evolution's dead on arrival, can't you see? The evidence speaks, it's not just me. Irreducible complexity, a puzzle unsolved.